With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Little Rocket Man is Chinese firewall.
Yeah, we don't call it whatever the Mandarin words for it is.
What would you guys call it?
Lore Boys here. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, drinking a refreshing English breakfast tea, even though it's not breakfast time. With me, of course, is James Miller.
Hi. Are you setting me up to say what I'm drinking here?
Oh, no. I would never set you guys up for anything. Come on. Come on.
Just talking about the longest day of work ever, and I have a bottle of white wine, a little stubby one that I didn't bother to fetch a glass for. So I'm just having a sipster here, yeah.
Jamie's got a chubby full of white wine.
Yeah.
And with us, of course, is Peter O'Donoghue.
Peter O'Donoghue. I've got two tall boys, two 500ml beer cans, because I also had a very long day tenting my fingers, working from home, watching the dissolution of a Hollywood movie. It's very thrilling.
I'm a big fan of white wine in the summer, man. Once it gets hot, and it's pretty hot today, like,
same.
So refreshing.
Yeah. Cold white wine, dude. White wine with ice, dude. Spritzers, ooh, like, baby. Oh, so good.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, I go through so many, like, SodaStream tanks in the summer because if it's not beer, it's just, like, white wine on the balcony, just fucking chilling, and just, like, constantly.
Is that a political statement? Spicy water. Is that a political statement supporting that SodaStream brand?
Dude. Isn't it brand affiliated carbonated water recarbonator.
Isn't it? Oh, that's one of the only things like from Israel that we buy or something.
Oh, is it?
It is. When I bought the new bottle because I wanted a second one just so I could make more water, it's got like a suspicious label on it that might as well say "now made without child slavery" and like "now" sort of thing.
But
it was a gift. It was a gift.
There's one hummus brand too, like I forget which one it is. But that's all I know that comes from Israel is hummus and SodaStream. And you can put them together and have bubbly hummus.
I think bubbly hummus is the worst thing I've ever heard.
Depends how big the bubbles are. Big bubbles, I'm a fan. Little bubbles, ooh, scratches my...
Yeah. I'm okay with spicy hummus, but the fizz means you just can't chug it the same way. You get to put the straw in it, and, like, crack it around the rim of the bottle, and then you've got to, you know, do the twister for your hummus bottle.
Yeah. So thanks for kicking us off, guys. We are, of course, doing a patron request, which was hummus lore this week. So now, as the listeners know from the title, it is going to be Magic the Gathering lore, specifically Kamigawa. Officially, the request comes from Magnus, because he's the one who put it in the Lore Request subchannel on the Lore Boys Discord. Check out the link in the description of this episode if you want to join. But shoutouts to, Jester, Bison, and Floeken have all separately kind of discussed Kamigawa, and most specifically the new expansion, which was the Cyberpunk expansion called Neon Dynasty.
Okay. Which looks so extremely... This one just flew through the Senate with like all the approvals from everybody who needs to vote on it. Well,
that's the thing about the Senate, right? Is there's like three or four key people who whatever they decide kind of decides what the entire thing votes. So
it's cyberpunk, a cyberpunk theme, like battle music, you know, that intense music that's happening. Yeah. But it's just like big guys sitting around in a chair and folding tables with their ass cracks showing. I'm excited.
Yeah, some of them have like cybernetic implants like at the top of their ass crack that you can see like the chrome sticking out.
Hey, do you think you could get like a cybernetic enhancement that like pulls your pants up for you, like an anti-plumber's crack aug?
Just a tiny little arm that peeks out and pulls it up every once in a while.
Yeah, like a clothes peg. Yeah. Well, the winch would be for like the people who don't have the money for the good one. Otherwise, it would just be like a little clip, kind of like the rear clip, the single clip on suspenders, and it just like runs up a rail on your spine.
I was thinking you just screw in like a little hook onto the back of your spine, and then when you pull up your pants, you put them on the little hook, and then they're out. Yeah,
that's even like lower sci-fi augmentation.
I mean. Yeah, some of us live in 2022. James lived in 2016, baby.
Yeah, he's living in 1925, because it might as well just be like that elastic that holds your fucking socks up.
Yeah. You know, it's the simplest inventions that go the farthest, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was super hyped when it was mentioned in the Discord. I really wanted to read about the Cyberpunk expansion called Neon Dynasty. I didn't get nearly that far. So we're starting with old school Kamigawa, which I guess will set the base for either a Neon Dynasty episode in the future, or if somebody's doing their own reading, this will at least give you the background of the world of Kamigawa.
Oh, cool. Please, no reading ahead. Do not read about anything that we do not talk about on the show.
Exactly. Or just, yeah, you legally have to forget it after you read it.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So... I mean, I guess we looked it up recently. Magic the Gathering is the topic that we've covered the most, and every single time we do a crash course at the beginning about what people remember. This one's going to require a lot less refresher, because we don't talk about a single planeswalker. As far as I know, anyway, all the people that we talk about, they're at least not planeswalkers yet. I'm pretty sure the set released before planeswalkers were canon, I guess. So before kind of the planeswalker spark and all that stuff that we've talked about in the past was canonized. So this was originally came out in like 2004, 2005. I'm saying this with a lot of confidence when I didn't look it up and didn't write it down, but I think like mid-aughts this came out. But so I mean, Magic the Gathering, there's five color types, right, which correspond to specific lands that you use to summon monsters and stuff and fight. And that's really all the refresher that I think we're going to need. A lot of this stuff pretty standalone, and a lot of it ties into the Shinto religion.
Most of everything happens in Dominaria Plane, right?
True. And so that's actually a really good refresher. Is we are going to talk about the Time Rift Crisis, which started in Dominaria, which we've talked about before, where a bunch of Time Rifts appeared in Dominaria, which is the central plane in all the planes of Magic the Gathering, where all magic flows through. So when Time Rifts happened, it led to disruption of other planes' magic as well.
Cool.
And now that I confidently said we're going to talk about it, that I might have cut that for the next episode. We'll get through the script. I'll remind myself what I wrote, and we'll figure it out.
I was so proud that I remembered something. You just got to tell me 14 times over the course of 5 years.
I think we're like at 20 something, so.
I didn't remember Dominaria at all. I remember like Urza, some of the names of the people the brothers wore.
So those were like the original ones, and then we did a bunch of stints of more modern ones.
I remember Karn. I remember
Jessica,
the lion.
You missed the end of Jessica. I remember there was one where I was in Mexico and I was sick and recorded with Ethan in my Mexican bed, and it was the only time I ever recorded from bed
with his stomach bugs.
Yeah.
Oh, when you had amoebas, that's true.
Yeah. My little friends who lived inside and turned my insides to water. Yeah.
Not yet.
Oh my god.
Amigo amoebas, we called them. So the plane of Kamigawa is one made of two: that of humans, known as the material world, and that of great godlike spirits, known as the spirit world. So the realm is based on Japan, from feudal lords known as daimyo of days gone by, to the fictional cyberpunk future of a Japan filled with kawaii robots who will pose for your selfie before oppressing you for the state.
Oh, Japan. I've heard that's in Shenmue, right? That's where that comes from?
Yeah, exactly. It's a Ghost of Tsushima is actually invented in Japan. So the name Kamigawa comes from Japanese. It means literally river of the gods or divine river. So the word kami in Japanese is often taken to mean gods, though it's more nuanced than that kind of interpretation of divinity, where like it's more like a very like fast flowing river could be a kami, when like in more Western circles we wouldn't consider it necessarily a god, while at the same time, you know, an all-powerful being who rules over the sun is also a kami, right? So it's more just meaning like divine presence than literal god, I guess, or personified god.
Yeah, there's that, I don't remember the dog's name, but there's, like, that painting dog game called Okami, which is, like, yeah, which is, I guess it's, like, the suffix that is, like, the it specifies that dog is divine.
Painting dog game? What was that?
Yeah, you don't remember this?
No, it's Amaterasu. Yeah, it's Amaterasu. She's a wolf that paints and fights with a paintbrush or some shit. Yeah, it's...
That sounds cool. I would have liked
it. Yeah, it's called Okami.
Yeah.
I think you can get it on PC or PS4. I think they ported it up.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, kami are gods in Japanese religion of Shinto. Kind of like
Americans, don't worry, he didn't say kami. Kamis are not gods. Settle down. Stop writing an email.
The guy on YouTube's gonna get all mad at us again.
Come on, lean back, dude. Unlock that caps. Come on, we're fine. We're all friends here. So Mount Fuji, which, you know, rears its peak over Tokyo, is regarded as a kami in Shinto. It's specifically that of princess. Wait for it. Konohana Sakuya Hime.
Wow.
Nice job.
Well, I mean, we think.
Let's go through some of these and just laughing at how, like, on the last three episodes, I've complained about, like, bullshit fantasy names and being like, huh, maybe I'm just, like, bad at names.
Well, now we've switched languages. I think you could be an expert on English names, but yeah.
Sure, yeah. I can say Brett, let me tell you.
Yeah. Or Greg, right? Yeah. Greg and his bonkles.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, fuck you. I wonder how many Joshes I hit with that one. I wonder. We'll find out later.
Yeah, if you're a Josh, crunch at us.
Yeah.
Tell Jamie to fuck you. So on Kamigawa, far away from many of the other planes of Magic the Gathering multiverse, it's like very much the far east of the multiverse, I guess, in a lot of senses. A lot of living is built around the interplay of these spirits and humanity. So the plane split into five pieces in one direction and two pieces in another direction, like a cross section. So in the two directions, we have the Kakuryu or Reikai, which is the spirit world, and we have the Utsushio, where mortals live. So the mortal world and the spirit world.
Okay.
In the other direction, we have split into five geographical areas.
Uh-oh.
You guys might recognize that number. One for each color of magic.
No way.
Nailed it. Just keep throwing it out there. You're going to be, you know, a broken clock is short twice a day or whatever it is.
All the colors of the magic. So the red, exactly, blue, green, black, white, and yellow.
Yeah. We, that's six, but unless you're counting white and yellow as a single color.
There's no yellow magic.
Five, and then when they were like extremely popular, they released the Pikachu brand of land.
Yes.
For the fact, yeah.
When are they going to bring the sixth magic anyways? You
know? I mean, they have colorless, which is like a canonical color of magic, so.
Okay.
Technically. So one area for each color of magic. Each of them has a dragon spirit loyal to the mortal inhabitant. Cool. So we're going to go through the five. I pasted you guys a map of Kamigawa. That said, don't take it too literally. None of the directions make any sense. It's more just to give you guys an image of, I mean, the central one is going to come into play, is probably what we're going to talk about the most. And then we're going to talk about the jungle areas.
It's a very like interpretive, like watercolor Japanese painting of like a fantasy continent. So
yeah,
I can't imagine they had a proper view of this place when they painted it. It looks like it would be up in a restaurant.
It looks like if they took the top left corner and drew a line to the bottom right corner, it's just like a flipped image of itself. There's like a tower right in the middle on the left and right side, or like the whole vertical strip of the tower kind of looks deserty, and then two vertical strips next to those look foresty, and then two vertical strips next to those look
mountainous.
Yeah, so you could just like fold the paper in half and it would be kind of the same on both sides. Yeah,
the geography makes sense though. The desert in the middle being like kind of surrounded by mountains, nowhere near an ocean, definitely. That stands up for as much as I know about Pangaea, that looks right.
It looks like if it stopped raining, they'd run out of water because all of their water flow into two giant pits that just like, yeah.
That's a problem that we deal with on our flat Earth, is the lack of fresh water.
It always falls off the other side.
Yeah, exactly, it just runs right off. So the first up of the planes, and yeah, I only say don't take the map too literally because originally I had directions, like relative directions of all the places in my script, and I took them all out because I was like, this doesn't make sense. But so first up of the domains is Hawabara, the eternal field, located directly in the center of Kamigawa. Upon the Great Plain rested a Ganjo castle, the home of Daimyo Takashi Konda and his samurai.
Now, this guy is the yellow magic, if I gotta say, but...
Yeah, that's the piss dragon I just pasted. So, Aganjo is in many ways the capital of Kamigawa, and is going to be a pretty big focus of what we're going to talk about today. And Konda, Takeshi Konda's samurai are probably the preeminent military force.
Well, it's Yosei, like Kawaboa, dude. It's the piss dragon. Surf's up.
this piss dragon that I've just posted for you guys is Yosei, the Morning Star. It's the dragon kami who watches over Tawabara.
Oh, God. And piss is so much worse in the morning, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's much more orange first thing in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the multivitamins that you had before bed, you know? They're just, they're all just getting ejected.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So next up is the Minamo Academy. It is a school of spirit and human magics. Built upon the largest waterfall in Kamigawa, so blue-aligned. Minamo is led by the Soratami, literally translated to Sky Folk or Moon Folk. We've met one before in our Innistrad episodes, Tamio. She was a Soratami, and she's the only Sky Folk ever depicted outside of Kamigawa.
Wow.
Okay.
So these people, the Soratami, they live in a city called Otawara, which rests in the clouds above the academy. Minamo is protected by Kaiga, the tides, whom I just posted, who's, I guess, swimming in Yosei's piss down there, the world's largest waterfall. One of those runs off the plains.
Wow.
That's a fucking awesome-looking dragon. The first one's a little hard to kind of figure out what's going on because he's got a lot of like flying parts orbiting his piss body.
I think they're like remoras. No, like they look like little fish that kind of like have like
They
parasitic onto him.
They clean off the piss that falls out of his mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
But the second one has like kind of like octopus like squid flaps on the side of its body as well as being like a
flatworm mask.
It's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. His flaps make me uncomfortable, to be honest, but I guess that's a sign of good art because I'm really feeling it by looking at
it. It's evocative, at the very least. Yeah.
So
Takenuma is a large area of swampland west of Iganjo. Again, I clearly forgot to take out the west there. Rife with bandits, rat folk known as Nezumi, and dark spirits known as Oni. There are patches of the swamp that are completely devoid of sunlight. Takenuma is guarded by Kokuso, the evening star. This guy, probably the most trad dragon we've seen so far.
They're so long, man. If you put all these dragons in your pocket, like by the time you got to wherever you went, they'd be so tangled.
So you put him in your... like gimpy little fins and is like powered by steam or something.
you put a friggin' celestial dragon into your pocket for like 3 minutes and they come out. It's just like a rat's nest of tangles and knots, dude. I just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
The logic, man. The Sokenzen mountain range is the largest in Kamigawa. Goblin creatures called Aki live with ogre creatures called Obakemono and renegade samurai known as Ronin. The mountains are guarded by Ryusei, the falling. So he's very fire aspected, I think it's fair to say. Like a shooting
he's
star.
He's actually
or a falling
absolutely
star.
The most normal looking Wait, one we've seen.
What was he? He's the falling what? We dropped for that one word.
He's the falling star.
The falling star, very cool.
I think they're all like something star, piss star, evening star.
Yeah, we have we got morning star, we have tide star, we have evening star, we have falling star, and finally we're gonna have rising star.
Jesus Christ, superstar.
Exactly. Yeah. Finally we're gonna have rising star coming out of Jukai Forest. It's a thick and verdant wood that harbors both many kami as well as orders of monks train themselves to be in tune with the nature around them. It has Kitsune, fox folk, and Orochi, snake folk. So this is where the furries and the scalies live.
Orochi's the name of the samurai in For Honor. The really fast, the one that everybody hates playing against. He's the snake. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a snake person.
Okay.
Kitsune's a fox person. They actually live in relative harmony. Like the Orochi don't seem like inherently evil, like you might have guessed. No one has ever discovered what lies to the east of the Jukai Forest.
Guys,
no one's ever been curious.
Just to put the end bracket on, I looked up if it's actually possible for snakes to get caught in knots. It turns out, like, in the wild, we've never seen them doing it. But when they're in captivity or in your pocket, it does happen from time to time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Jamie's just Googling naughty snakes while we're recording. So unbelievable. No,
I said, speaking of naughty animals, I think that's also true for mantises eating the males. It's been done in captivity, but no one's ever observed it in the wild.
Oh, yeah.
I think, I don't quote me on that, but I think I heard that at some point.
You've been quoted at this point, dude. You quoted yourself. Yeah, this is all on the record, just so you know.
Yeah, it's just like you're like unzipping your pants in front of a journalist. You're like, this is off the record, right? Yeah. I don't think the mantis eats the male mantis in the wild.
This might be the first podcast I didn't bother to put pants on for. That's what I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hot. I paused the AC for this episode and I closed the door and it's cooking in here.
Oh, it's very warm.
So the forest of Jukai is washed over by that last dragon who I sent to you. He's also a very traditional looking dragon. Got kind of like spirits floating around him, and he's got like a white like pearl right in the center of his forehead, and that is Jugan the Rising.
Big old antlers on him too.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a temple dragon if I ever saw one.
Yeah, for sure. he's not getting tangled in your pockets. You see all those bends he's got going on? This is a guy who knows how to get knotted. Okay.
Yeah. Imagine there's like hunter mages who go after the like 12 buck dragons or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like strapped to the roof of like 11 minivans all like as a train.
Yeah, you gotta use like a wider wand with a big barrel so you get a good spread and you shoot them at it. And, yeah.
Bagged myself a 12 pointer last night. So the stage is set. That's all the regions of Kamigawa. We'll start our story with a young kitsune named Wise Muzzle.
Oh, we're going straight into the furries.
Straight furries, yeah. Furries. No, it's not going to be furries all the way through, but we're definitely going to start. So,
okay.
Born among his people in the town of Tsusuki Village, he was marked from a young age. Young furry had an abnormality. Instead of being born with a pure white tail, as almost all kitsune were, he had a streak of black in his. This was viewed as an omen of a great destiny, and from early on, Wise Muscle was regarded as one who would change the world.
They do that a lot, eh? With, like, hair colors, skin colors, eye color in stories, yeah.
Yeah, just religious, like, early age, unintelligent people just finding, like, meaning in everything, just trying to explain, like, all the dying that's going on.
Yeah. and, like, being trained very well to pick out differences, right? Yeah,
exactly. You're not like the rest of them.
Yeah, or you got to see like the differences in the forest line, or else that tiger might eat you or whatever.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It seems like he wasn't like he was kind of revered for this mark that he had on him. He wasn't like treated with distrust. He was treated with like, more trust.
Oh yeah. Like it's not one of the, because I love it when in like some like poorly written storytelling where someone with just like a streak of different colored hair is like reviled as though they're disfigured or some kind of freak.
Exactly.
It's just like what the fuck? It's just like two people with different hair color.
Yeah.
It's Cruella de Vil. Like,
yeah.
She's
got a streak like a suit made of puppies, but the streak is what they're worried about.
Yeah. So while Wise Muzzle, was still young, maybe it was Bader Meinhof manifest or something else. He made it pretty clear that he knew he was fit for a grandiose destiny as well. And so it was like looking for opportunities to kind of learn more and prove himself. A group of Ronin, which they're like renegade samurai. They attacked Suzuki Village and took Wise Muscle's childhood friend hostage. They're asking for a ransom, which the village could not pay, so the young fox took matters into his own.
Are they Ronin human?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, these. So at this point in the story, or maybe not precisely at this point, but typically there's like roaming bands of humans. There's not like a ton of like coordinated civilization just yet. We'll talk about a guy who kind of founds the first civilization, which is Takeshi Konda, and we'll talk about where that kind of leads, but... These are like people who've probably been outcast from their own like more upstanding tribes and now are forced to kind of like go live in bandit tribes in the mountains.
Okay. There was, whenever my main guild broke up in WoW, we broke off and became Light Treason, and another raid group broke off and became Ronin, because they were the rebel samurais or whatever.
Tris, exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So details are pretty scarce of this time in his life. We have a few of them. Wise Muzzle, was able to rescue his friend from the Ronin on his own. Again, as a child, basically. The village is like, we can't help them. I guess all these, you know, your friends got to die or whatever. So he takes it upon himself, saves his friend. The village elders, witnessing this, bestowed upon Wise Muzzle his second tail. So tails in Kitsune culture are seen as trophies of a sort, I guess, markers of achievements, either spiritual, practical, or emotional. And Wise Muzzle wasn't about to stop at two tails. He got the second furry butt plug. He's like, I need more. Got to increase my power. For the listeners at home, Pete was pantomiming a butt plug on camera.
I didn't want to say it. I wanted to see which one of you would.
I like that, though. And you're like, when people have, like, actual people get tails because their spine are a couple things too long. So they'd be revered and not humiliated when they have that little skin nub at the end of their butt. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's Jamie's dream scenario, where he wouldn't be mocked for his vestigial tail.
For his tiny ape tail.
I walked away from you on camera in my boxers in confidence.
With no pants on.
Yeah, in confidence.
I showed you my vestigial tail. So his third tail comes when he's still a child. He eased the passing of a samurai's death, became a cleric. Which earns him his third. The village elders are like, damn, you were like, that's some good bedside manner. Take a tail.
These like clipped on, or do they grow magically? Like, we were joking about like, haha, butt plug and whatnot.
It's
a furry thing, but like.
I'm going to say grow magically. Here. You guys can peek 30 seconds into the future, where here's him all grown up. So you can tell that he's going to get more tails. Okay. His fourth comes when he masters his clerical duties and he becomes a sensei. As a sensei, he was gathering some international renown. People asked him to open his own temple. Even Daimyo Takeshi Konda, who at this point had founded he'd gathered like a bunch of war bands under him, formed like the closest thing to a civilization we probably have. So he's the ruler of Toabara and probably the most powerful man in Kamigawa, at least politically. He had asked Wise Muzzle to become his personal physician. Wise Muscle refused all the glamour and renown, however, and chose to remain in Suzuki Village and teach the new generation in the ways of the spirit. Didn't get him a tail. Don't know. Yeah. It seems kind of random. But.
He looks like Overwatch Zenyatta's furry skin, really.
He does, yeah.
I mean, probably based on the same inspirations, right? Probably drawing from the same sources, like Kitsune being like mythical fox creatures with multiple tails. You guys might have heard of the Fox of Nine Tails before, which
or we're the Pokemon get. Nine Tails as well.
Based on the same, right?
There's also a monster in Monster Hunter called Mizutsune. I'm just gonna Google and see.
There's also a whip, right, that they would like hit people with called a Nine Tails.
Yeah, a fox tail at the end of a butt plug that you just whack people with.
No, the whip, the whip, or the disciplinary tool is the Kato Nine Tails.
Kato.
That makes sense. So in order, Wise Muscle developed a new martial arts technique known as the Tourney Principle to create a perfect defense. He saved all of Hagi Village from a plague, and he spoke directly with a kami, earning him his fifth, sixth, seventh tails.
Damn.
All at once?
No, just kind of like over time. I'm just kind of rattling these off because we don't need to dwell too much on all of them. Yeah.
It's too bad he's not wearing like a U.S. naval like military jacket. And he's just got a bunch of foxtails hanging off the chest. Like Obama, that picture of Obama just putting a foxtail around his neck.
Somebody photoshopped it for us. I will say I say no, not all at once, but it doesn't say specifically not all at once. So. I guess we could say Loreboy's canon. Yeah, he was like, he figured out the perfect defense against the plague, and then Akami came and spoke to him at the same time.
Cool. Nice.
So his eighth, obviously a momentous occasion, came when his apprentice Ironclaw chose to leave his teaching and become a samurai, and Wise Muzzle let him.
Cool.
I don't know why this one, I have an ellipsis, I have a dot, dot, dot in my script where I'm like, I don't know why this one earned him one when him like, turning down the king of the land to instead stick to his humble ways of teaching the youths didn't earn him one, but just like letting one of his students leave and not like taking him prisoner earns him one. But
it's weird how the same information can hit different, like two different but you know what? That also means that all of you should probably re-listen to all of the Lore Boys podcast because it might just hit different this time.
That's true.
Listen to
yeah.
Yeah.
There's only 226 episodes. It'd be fine.
It'd be fine. So his ninth and final tale came when he rose to position of Dalai Lama and became the spiritual leader of for all Kitsune on Kamigawa. So he's their spiritual leader.
We're going to finally get banned in China. You said Dalai Lama out loud. Let's go.
I don't know if comparing a clearly fictional creature to the Dalai Lama constitutes getting banned in China, but we can only hope that it does.
God will. Are we on the internet? Someone from China, please write in. Let us know. Are we on your internet?
Yeah. Or someone, one of our listeners, just go to China and try and hack through the Great Firewall and just like see if you can.
Is that what they call it?
I think that's what we call it.
I mean, that sounds like something that Donald Trump would say when he's like,
that's why I think that,
you can't do anything on the internet there. The Great Firewall.
The name of the technology. That's the name of the technology unlock in Civ 5. That's why I know it.
It's the great firewall.
I feel like I'm on Jamie's side because it does feel like something made up in the West because it's just like a recognizably Chinese pun, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Wikipedia page for it. You guys can decide for yourself.
Little Rocket Man is Chinese firewall.
Yeah, we don't call it whatever the Mandarin words for it is.
Imagine it's just like doubly racist whenever you hear the Mandarin. The Great Firewall, it makes sense. They have the Great Wall. It's a wonder of the world. So
The Chinese translates to literally no learned white man bullshit.
Yeah.
I wish.
Yeah.
Can you see the Great Firewall from space is my question.
Yeah.
I wonder.
So no one had ever had a better understanding of the Kami or their ways than Wise Muzzle, now known as Nine Tails. He was the most experienced mortal on all of Kamigawa, full stop. So there you guys can see. You only see eight of his tails, so I'll let the listener's imagination decide where that ninth tail might be. He continued, so Nine Tails continues to receive requests from people all over Kamigawa who sought his particular insight on matters relating to the spirit.
Does he become like a phone-in like fortune teller, like Ms.
He's
Cleo?
He's a televangelist, basically.
Hell yeah.
You're going to hell if you're not sending Nine Tails another fox tail, basically. So you can buy. He's buying jets made out of fox tails. It's a mess. he does his best to enlighten people wherever he could. Obviously, he's still just one man, even though he's very intelligent. He's not particularly, let's say, powerful. He's very, very smart and very learned. It was not unusual, and probably not even the first time, when Takeshi Konda reached out asking for some information on ritual. The aging leader had been ruling a united Toabara for nearly 50 years. So 50 years ago, at this point, he's the one who united the warlord tribes into a single front, basically, to lead Toabara. And now he's reaching out to Nine Tails for advice on a ritual. He worried about the stability of Kamigawa after he was gone. Again, he was probably like in his 20s whenever he conquered it. 50 years later, like, he's getting on for sure. He's worried about the stability. He had, you know, united Toabara, and he's worried if people would respect the rule of his heirs after he was gone. Mainly, he doesn't have any heirs just yet, but as far as I could tell anyway, we're going to get to... I could only find mention of one who was born anyway, who should be on the way. So he's been ruling
for 50 years. I have no heir. I can't get hard anymore. Will people still respect my heir?
just dust.
And all these nine tails, they just take up more and more blood flow.
He's got his own like little fake nine tails, just like pinned into him, basically. We got nine tails. We got nine dicks, but it's hard to get nine dicks hard.
That's like the old saying goes.
Yeah.
Put that on a piece of corn.
Yeah.
Geshi Konda had gathered a council of some of the greatest minds of Kamigawa to help him come up with a solution and ensure lasting peace in his realm. The head of the Minamo Academy, an ambassador of the Soratami, and the general of the armies of Iganjo Samurai met with him to discuss a plan before they decided to reach out to him. Ninetales, as requested, researched the Kekuryo, the spirit world, and the specific rituals, and prepared the results for Konda. Before he turned them over, he kind of had this moment where he realized that the rituals described in his research could, possibly, not necessarily would be used to breach the barrier between the mortal world and the spirit world. Ignoring his own nagging senses, he assured himself that Konda and his advisors were sane and stable enough to not meddle with the very fabrics of reality.
Konda, the books, like how to mess with the fabrics of reality, like on the books.
Just like changes the title. Like I probably shouldn't hit that. I'm just gonna rename the paper before I submit it for peer review.
Yeah.
How to break the great spirit firewall.
Konda naturally only intended to meddle with the very fabrics of reality. His plans would lead to a parting of the veil, a full-on war with the gods, but we'll talk about more on that after a quick commercial break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back. We were talking about Takeshi Konda, a man with everything to lose. His empire had been built up from rival warlords, and from those disparate parts, he had built a thriving kingdom where he could enjoy his concubines' relative peace.
And now he's got the scroll, like, godlike power in 10 easy steps. He's like, okay, cool, great.
Yeah, sure, why not? He's like, finally the time to enjoy all these concubines, but he's like the old guy in Twilight Zone who breaks his glasses, except his dick don't work anymore.
It was time.
Yeah, he like drops his last Viagra tablet and like gets like run over by like a horse-drawn carriage.
Just breaks neatly in half. Like, yeah. No!
It's useless!
His people liked him, and he even has a daughter on the way from his favorite concubine.
Oh, good.
Takeshi knew that the peace he'd won through battle was tenuous, or at least felt that it was tenuous, and with him not getting any younger, he had enacted a plan. Using the rituals provided by Ninetales, Konda intended to capture a kami and to use its power to stop his aging so that he might live to maintain control within Kamigawa. So he's just a good guy. He understands that nobody can do it as good as him, so he's got to be leader forever. Very normal and healthy.
I think so.
So he's trying to capture a god to...
Yeah.
Okay.
Essentially.
Do we know which one? Is he going after a dragon? Oh, I guess you'll get to it. I don't want to get ahead.
Yeah, so... great question, Jamie. Of course, the great leader that he was, he would need a great spirit to use as well, right? Not just any old kami's going to do for this guy. Come on. So what greater spirit than Okagachi? Or the world soul?
Okay.
So again, not an evil guy, let me tell you. Very, very good guy. So World Soul in Magic the Gathering, we haven't really talked about it before, is basically the sentient awareness of an entire planet.
Cool.
So just like the essence of Kamigawa is like the one that he's going, basically.
Okay.
There's only a handful of canonized World Souls. I think there's like less than 10. None is as developed as Okagachi or as like present and manifest as Okagachi becomes. So on Dominaria, good job, Jamie. Gaia is sometimes believed to be its world soul. Right. So that's probably something that you guys are familiar with. Some of the listeners are familiar with from
that's
the
our
myth.
Where... our own world soul, isn't it?
That's yeah, a, essentially.
That's the soul that makes it so hot I can't wear pants just because I threw an ashtray into the Great Lakes.
Yeah, exactly. that's how that works.
You haven't installed your AC yet? The one that you have to control with like an adjustable wrench because the fucking dial broke off?
No, I got the one that you gave me. I need to put it in still. I was kind of trying to push it off, but the heat's sticking around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time you throw an ashtray into one of the Great Lakes, an iceberg just falls off of Antarctica, basically.
Yeah, it's just like Jamie ashing in a lake, and then just like smash cut to like one of those shots of like 50 million tons of ice like collapsing in front of David Attenborough.
So on Dominaria, Gaia is sometimes believed to be its world soul, not even canonized beyond that. On Zendikar, which is a plane we've talked about before, where Emrakul was imprisoned, the Eldrazi, Nissa Ravain, the planeswalker, was able to communicate with the world soul, though it's never named. Ashaya, the awoken world, is a card from that set, which was the elemental manifestation of Zendikar's world soul, not necessarily the world soul itself.
And that baby from that's in the sun in Teletubbies actually is mm-hmm. the sun's world soul.
Of the Teletubby plane.
Yeah. Don't piss it off. Its eyes go red and it can just like incinerate other planets. Yeah.
Exactly. So now we've got the ruler of Kamigawa looking forward to like consume the world soul of Dipsy, one of the Teletubbies.
I remember it being like a rumor when I was a kid that like even my dad was saying like, you know what, the purple one's gay. It has a purse. It's like why do people care so much about this?
I remember that was a playground myth that I think it was like some manufactured controversy on we'll call it Ox News probably.
Tucker Carlson's dad.
Tucker Carlson's dad, yeah.
Just instilled it into him like don't
back
let
in the day, yeah. Back in the day our costume characters used to be straight. More.
let's be real, okay? Tucker Carlson's father never spoke to him. That's why he's
how he is. That's probably the issue, right? Yeah.
that's why he is who he is.
Guys,
okay?
He wasn't careful. Loved. We're going to get to woke comments on YouTube again. We got to be careful.
Oh, dude. We had like the Mars bar and like the green M&M being a dumpy pig now. Next up to be featured, we got to get on Fox, guys. Yeah, we'll be on. Like, we're fucking up society in some way, yeah.
All right, yes, please. Yes, please.
According to our YouTube comments, anyway.
Yeah. I'll be the gay one. I'm the only one who's not in, like, seeing girls right now, so I'll do it.
James is the purple Teletubby of the lore boy.
Yeah. Unmarried, no children, no explanation.
Vestigial tail. I mean, there's a lot of layers.
Yeah. I'm in my basement apartment. I've got a husky, so I need the vacuum with the googly eyes to help me out with all this hair. Yeah.
Okagachi, the purple kami, also known as the great old serpent, is literally translated to big mouthed rope.
That
is a great name for someone.
That is 100%. That is, like, you called it out, like, I guess because you had written the script. That is absolutely the first caveman on the island of Japan. Named it that.
Big mouth rope. So the great old serpent, he is the first kami. He's known by a handful of other titles, such as the great kami of all things, the soul of the world, the most ancient kami, the kami of all kami, the ultimate guardian of both realms and the boundary between the two worlds, the kami of the veil between worlds, and finally, the embodiments of both the Kakuryo and Ushushio. Again, our hero, Takeshi Kanda, is going after this evil entity, basically, with good reason, right? Just to try and ensure the stability of his own...
If I get to
What was that second to last title there? The control between the veil of the two worlds or whatever? He's like, that was unimportant.
The soul of the world, the very first kami, and as old as the plane itself, would be the final target of Konda's raid on the spirit world. that he would use Ninetales' research to achieve. Geshi Kanda and his followers entered the spirit world and tore the heart out of the Okagachi, taking from it its very divinity and brought it back to his own realm. On the night of his daughter Michiko's birth, Takeshi reached into the Kakuryu and stole Kyodai, or that which was taken from Okagachi. Michiko's birth saw a huge influx of spiritual energy into the world, providing the gasoline for Takeshi's inferno of a crime. So basically created a like ritual out of his daughter's birth that he used to pierce into the spirit world and rip out Okagachi's heart, which I have pasted for you guys in the chat. That is the known as the one that which was taken, or the taken one.
It's one of the coolest things I have ever seen in my life.
I knew you guys would like it because I also thought it was extremely cool. Yeah. You guys want to take a stab at describing it for the listeners? It's maybe one of the more challenging ones we've ever had.
It has three faces with like an orb hovering a bunch above it. And that's like a really small part of the picture. And then there's almost like fractal like spires coming all the way down the ridge of its back. And yeah. It has like furry arms and stuff.
It's a dragon, right? Yeah. It's still a dragon.
Yeah, yeah, it's essentially the dragon. This image makes it kind of look like a horse, I find, where its face kind of looks horse-ish, but I think it is intended to be a dragon. And then where its eyes would be, it basically has three human faces.
And it's like, the setting even, it's like trees and rivers, but the river's weirdly reflective of like this, what looks like a mechanical dome that's all around it, that's like black with like red pulses going through it.
Yeah, it's got some vibes of like the Emperor on the Golden Throne from 40K, where it's just clearly like plugged into this apparatus around it kind of thing. So he takes it. The daimyo takes the taken one, imprisons it in a stone disc with a carving of a dragon upon it. So I think, and I don't think this, you know, the setting in this image is necessarily canon, but we can say Lore Boys canon. This is what the inside of a Pokeball looks like, basically.
that sounds horrible.
Where the taken one is.
It even has that little like button there where you can see.
Yeah,
through
it's got the little circle where you push the Pokeball.
you think there's a window there, and like
yeah you can just see out.
Imagine like Brock's to Onyx, how much like weird date activity he's seen ever. Like,
boy, he's got it on the bedside table, but instead of it being a picture of your wife and kids, it's like the Pokeball that you like rotate away from, like the infidelity you're about to do.
I mean, Brock's Onyx could be a youth.
Probably.
Yeah. So Konda steals the taken one, puts it in a stone disc, which he places in his inner sanctum underneath his throne. From it, Takeshi receives immortality and foresight, which he may have wished he had beforehand, and he may want to start using any time now. Because as we're going to see, I don't get what his gift of foresight really was with everything that's to come in this story.
But I keep having these dreams where ripping the heart out of the planet was the wrong thing. And he just never brought it up, right?
Guys, we've seen That's So Raven, right? Which everybody in today's days must relate to.
Yeah, she has relevant reference.
Premonitions, right? And then no matter what she does, usually the whole episode is her trying to stop this premonition from happening, but it always leads into the premonition happening.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The more you struggle against like your fate, you just walk right into it kind of thing. But
and the one thing she never tries in all the episodes is giving back the heart of the god that she tore out.
Yeah, why is that, Raven?
The hell, Raven, dude? That's why Corey went to jail. Thanks a lot. when Tails realized what had happened, what his research had led to, he took a knife to his ninth tail and would become forever known as Eight Tails. So whatever
you cut out there. Eight what now?
Oh. You want me to just take it from the top?
Just eight. No, just eight. The name just
eight,
there.
He became known as Eight and a Half Tails.
Eight and a Half Tails. Okay, he didn't lose the whole tail when he cut it off.
So any of you perverts who were guessing where his ninth tail was in an inappropriate location, you're disgusting. That picture that I shared with Jamie and Peter that you guys did not see. Is actually of Eight and a Half Tails, was the name printed on the card.
Oh, I see, so, okay.
He's cut off his tail at that.
There's a bunch of weird stuff you sent here. You sent me a link to Kami Shot Compilation. I'm not sure what that is.
That's the Patreon bonus content, so save that one, okay? gonna get a little blue. So all kami are kind of descended from the first kami. They're all intrinsically merged with the kami of all things. So when Okagachi learned of the theft, his fury was felt by all kami.
Okay.
So they're all pissed. This kami struck back at the impudent mortals, and the kami war began.
Okay, yeah, it's like, I mean, his gift of foresight is just like, I stole the sun from the sky, and now the Teletubbies want me dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody went to America and cut the penis off the president of the United States. Now all Americans are mad. You know what I mean?
What? I wonder if that's ever happened. Remember the Canadians got the White House? I wonder if we did that too one time or another. But
yeah. We cut Andrew Jackson's dick off. Okay, so you're welcome, world.
Didn't he kill a guy in a duel?
He's insane. Yeah, he had like pellets from a shot in his chest his entire life. Like someone shot him first, and then he shot second. Duels.
Yeah, he loved fighting duels, and that's what he used to do. Is he would always let the other guy shoot first, and then he would kill the guy.
He'd just take a shot in the chest. He'd like a video game character, and then go next. Yeah.
Also, one of the worst human beings to have ever lived.
Yeah, I think I knew like that. That was the trivia that I knew about him as a foreigner.
Yeah. Trail of Tears. Trail of Tears was Andrew.
So. You're gonna be evil. You better be tough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's what that song's about.
Yeah, exactly. So the kami war begins. Kami are going at humans, not happy with the fact that their great kami of all kami's heart was taken, and its divinity was taken. Takeshi would seldom take to the battlefield himself. He was enraptured by his divine prize and spent his days basking in its presence, imagining a world of glorious peace, all while mortals died in droves outside his castle wall.
Like so. The One Ring, he's like addicted to the power sort of thing. It's magic death, that sort of thing.
I would imagine that if you could behold the heart of a god, we'd all probably get a little swept up in the moment, right?
Yeah.
And now he's immortal, so he's got all the time in the world. Right, he's like, probably just instantly loses all concept of time. Basically,
he felt the warmth of the Teletubby son's fingers, chubby little fingers, like wrap around his index finger, and just like he's just so enraptured by being a new dad.
So enraptured, he became gay.
Who's the guy? So the Teletubby made the evil emperor. The Teletubby son made the evil emperor gay. Is that what happened?
So the purple one in that case has now like witnessed the face of God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was saying if you could ever behold the face of God, you'd probably turn gay too.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Gay for God. Gay for Jesus. That's me.
The G is for God.
That would be a great t-shirt though, right? Gay for Jesus.
Like, I guarantee it exists.
It must exist. Yeah, I feel like that's from something.
Yeah.
So the kami would appear sporadically throughout Kamigawa's mortal plane, wreaking devastation where they went, while the general population actually remains pretty ignorant of what Lord Konda had done. They merely saw their ever-powerful leader with a new power unto him, having mastered the secrets of immortality. And I mean, from what I could tell, nobody's like, oh, this guy, like, definitely is the reason all these kami are suddenly appearing after, you know, thousands of years of peace with them and attacking us. It's definitely because our king is now suddenly immortal. Like, that's right. I couldn't find anything explicitly saying that that was the case, but I like to think Loreboy's canon. There was a good amount of people who were like, yeah, no, it's bullshit. Our political system sucks. I think our leader should be elected, not just the giant child baby sun in the sky reaches down a tiny little baby hand and wraps it around somebody's finger and they get divine right to rule. This is bullshit.
Pete already got the gay for Jesus shirt up in the boy chapter.
It's $26 Canadian dollars on Etsy. You can buy it now.
All right. On next episode.
All three of us wear the same.
All in boxers and all in gay for Jesus shirts.
Yeah.
So killing a kami in the material world doesn't seem to have a lasting effect. They just rematerialize in the spirit world and then eventually make their way back to the material.
St-
stamp their feet, go, doo, foiled again, and then like,
exactly.
try and rematerialize.
Yeah. The war rages for years. Throughout it, all of Kanda's forces fought where they can, but as you can't actually kill Kami, you can only banish them, it's pretty doomed. Even if a Kami kills, like, even if you kill 1,000 Kami, and that those Kami kill one human, that's like net loss for you guys, right?
Yeah. There's probably an actual number higher than that, because you can reproduce fast enough, probably, but...
You're assuming that a Kami takes, 18 years to rematerialize?
Well, I pictured it...
You have to get killed, you have to, like, conceive a child, and then that child has to, like, become fighting age, even if you want to give him, like, a comically oversized helmet when he's 13, and a spear way too big for
and
him.
And the Uruk-hai are at Helm's Deep Gate.
Oh, exactly, right?
It takes some time. I picture it, like, losing all your personal ID. Like, first you gotta get your birth certificate, then you gotta go get your passport, and, like, the commies, every time they get banished, they gotta go through all this whatever, and then they popped out. Like, it probably takes a couple months for them to get out, you know?
I got killed in the material plane, my wallet was on my physical body, so I don't have my Medicare card, but I can't get my driver's license without my Medicare card, and then that's the only other federal ID that I have, so,
exactly.
Well, that's why they say don't. It's that doesn't happen to all Kami, but the Kami who bring their like passport into battle with them, those are the ones who end up losing.
it's ridiculous.
It's left on the mortal plane, and then it's like, oh my god, I got to get to the mortal plane. They're like, you can't get to the mortal plane without a passport. They're like, well, I left it there. So it's a big, headache for sure.
What a prize for a warrior, huh? To get a god's passport.
Like, is it on a chain like dog tags? Like two passports and one snaps off easily.
I'm picturing like you know how like people would take like trophies from war, like they'd make like a belt out of like ears, basically.
Oh, like the necklace of passports.
And it's like stamped Dominaria. That's the only one I know. Yeah. Fuck.
You got Ravnica.
Where's D&D, the Rat Tower?
Talking about this in the Discord today.
Oh wait, that's 40.
Rat Tower's in Warhammer.
Yeah, fuck.
we're both mixing up the canon now. I mean, there's Kamigawa, you'd say, because these guys don't seem to necessarily have the ability to planeswalk anyway. So they all it would just say like Spirit World, right?
Right.
Or whatever the Japanese name for Spirit World is. I can't remember it if it's not written in.
Right.
Fair.
So Kanda rarely leaves his castle, kind of like I said. He keeps his daughter Michiko, the one who was born when he captured that which was taken. He keeps her close, though still manages to neglect her. His attention is focused entirely on that which was taken, and Michiko was left to her tutors to raise. Kanda understood the relationship Michiko had to his trophy, as her birth allowed him to capture her in the first place, so he did guard her strictly while ignoring her otherwise.
Yeah, all the photos, it's just like, oh, it's like, oh, cursed stone tablets, first steps and shit. Yeah. in the photo album.
Yeah, all his posts on Facebook are about the stone tablet, basically. Like.
Yeah.
Stone tablet still lying under my throne after all these years, so loyal. So Michiko eventually grows up into a young woman. The war is taking years, basically, and she's becoming pretty desperate to do something for her besieged. So she wants to be a good ruler, unlike Daddy.
Okay.
She had friends, and she knew not to trust her father. So she flees Aiganjo Castle with the help of her friend Choryu, and they headed for the Minamo Academy, where she thought the scholars there may be able to help her. So she's like, they're smart people at school. I'm going to school to see if they can teach me some way that I can help my people.
Right. Cool. Yeah. At the homeschooling I've had all revolves around this evil tablet, and I think there's more to life, probably.
Yeah, my parents couldn't afford like full tablets because they're just so big, right? And there's so much to read through your whole like curriculum. So we got like really thin stone sheets that were held together with binder stuff. But if you turn the page too quick, it shatters the page.
Shatters them.
So it's like it was really tough homeschooling.
Like a three ring binder with like slate pages. Shatter.
You have to be really delicate. You know, it's expensive. Yeah. This stuff.
School supplies. Yeah, because our school supplies in Canada are expensive because they're all made of volcanic rock or something.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Yes.
Strong backs.
Oh yeah.
So they're heading for the academy. They get betrayed and can't go to the academy. They're forced to wander Kamigawa for a time, where they finally landed in Jukai, the forest, where she met a Ronin samurai known as Toshiro Umezawa, who, with the help of a great moth, moved her to a cave in Jukai where she might be safe from agents of her father who were chasing. So she meets friendly guy who's willing to help her for a price. He's a renegade samurai, so she hires him basically as a bodyguard and someone who can show her around, because all her friends are like, you know, yuppies who grew up in the city and don't know which plants are poisonous and which.
Okay. Right, yeah. After the third night of, like, strange berry-induced diarrhea in the woods, she's just like, I think we need a professional.
Yeah.
Of little amigos.
Yeah,
exactly. They're full of amoebas.
Yeah. Guy rides in on a giant moth and is like, oh, I heard you might need be in need of a bit of help with just, like, poison mushrooms falling out of a bag in his back pocket. So his name was Toshiro Umezawa. You guys,
I'm sorry. I'm picturing the logistics of everyone driving around on giant moths and them having to remove all streetlights because
you can't fly it. That's the thing, right? Yeah. You got to train your moth not to fly at the giant Teletubby baby in the sky, and once it knows that, you're usually pretty good, right?
Right.
It's actually the Great Plain that it in Toobara, they all kind of fly on giant moths, like all the warriors.
Very cool.
They're mounts and steeds. So Toshiro Umezawa, you guys probably don't remember. Maybe some listener does remember. One of our previous episodes, I don't even remember which one. I think it was not Elspeth, but Jamie said it earlier.
Jessica.
Yeah, I think it was Jessica 3.
Jessica 3.
Or maybe Elspeth. Anyway, it's one of our third episodes, I think. Tetsuo Umezawa bested Bolas in single combat. He's a descendant of Toshiro. So this is like the setup of a noble lineage of Kamigawa warriors. But Nicol Bolas is like the magnetic dragon, is what we call him on this show. But one of the most powerful beings in existence. And this guy's descendant ends up beating him in single combat in the Plain of Meditation.
Absolutely insane. Yeah, that's
would
crazy.
That not have happened in like the Johnny Goldmain one? Isn't that when? Because doesn't he?
That would have been Elspeth then, right? Yeah, because Johnny and Elspeth, like Johnny was part of Elspeth's storyline.
True. Yeah. Okay.
So yes, to answer.
Okay.
So while hiding, the two were found by a kami named Moki. The smiling kami of Crescent Moon, and this guy's super minor character, but I included a picture because he's a great looking guy.
He does not look trustworthy whatsoever.
He looks like a Dark Souls thing that you'd like come over the ridge and he's just sitting there.
So, Siegfried of Catalina or whatever was exactly what I thought whenever I saw him. Like, he's like this big chunky round guy, all blue, just like corpulent flesh, and he's like smiling uglily in front of a crescent.
He's smiling? Where's his face? Oh, he's looking at us. Oh my god, that makes it worse. I thought he was looking away.
Side note here is, I was like, oh man, these guys don't even need me anymore, because Jamie hit all the like hot points I wanted to talk about with the soul of the world here, like all the crazy, like the ivory pillars and the golden discs and all this stuff. I was like, Jamie's got at least one artist bone in his body.
I was proud of myself. Like, thank you for noticing.
Yeah, but it's just, and then it's like this guy whose face is clearly visible. You're just like, where's his face?
It's pretty small on my screen. Maybe I have a smaller screen than you or something. Or like the picture's only this big.
Yeah, it's our lowest resolution one. Again, super minor. I just thought he was a funny guy, so I wanted to include
him.
Yeah, he's a chubby little blue guy. He looks like a bunch of stacked blueberries, honestly, with like a goofy face on top.
Yeah. He got rejected from the Blue Man Group for being too chunky, and he's since turned to eat.
He'd run out of breath when they were like drumming through paint and shit.
He's also American propaganda. What's his name? Smiling Kami of the Crescent Moon? Like,
One of your neighbors might be a smiling kami of the Crescent Moon. Report them to City Hall.
So Moki showed Michiko the truth of her birth. He gave her a vision of the crime her father had committed. So finally somebody's being straight with her and at least telling her what the heck is going on.
Ah, hello. I brought your baby photos. As you can see here, your father used you to reach into the soul of the planet.
the soul of the world soul and take out its heart. So Moki had plans for the mortals. That's why he's sharing. And he bade them approach another kami. The Myojin of Night's Reach, the kami of secrets, was ready to offer Toshiro a bargain.
All right.
Many kami, it seemed, were benefiting from the war.
Kamis love secrets.
Yeah, exactly.
And wars.
Yeah. So all espionage, some of them, it seems like, are doing pretty well in the with the war going on.
Oh, okay.
Moki had gained the ability to enter the mortal realm with the weakening of the veil. Previously, he'd been kind of relegated to the spirit realm, while Myojin had unlocked the ability to travel across the multiverse. Again, this is what makes me think this might have been pre-Planeswalker canonization, just because it says, like, the Myojin of Night's Reach can planeswalk, but doesn't say planeswalk, just says she can travel. So,
okay. Yeah. She's Dick Cheney. She's benefiting from the war, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I shared an image. It does look just like Dick Cheney, so.
Yeah, the distended scarlet claws, the horns, the fur hood.
Exactly. Exactly. So, not wanting to give up the power to travel the multiverse, because, like, hey, if you could go anywhere kind of with the blink of an eye, why would you want to give that up, right? The Myojin of Night's Reach offered Toshi a deal. The power to defeat or escape from any enemy in return for him stealing that which was taken from Konda. But not to return it to its rightful owner, instead to also keep it out of Okagachi. So she's like, finds this samurai, very powerful samurai in his own right, and says, I'll give you the power to either defeat or escape any enemy, as long as you use that power to steal the disc and then keep the disc away from everybody and just keep the war going. Like, keep the veil weakened, wow. Basically.
Right, okay. Yeah, oh, she is Dick Cheney. Holy fuck.
Yeah, exactly. what is it? Dick Cheney of Knights, right? So seeing the power in the Kami's blessing, Toshi accepts. He's like, you know what? That sounds like a favorable deal for me. In the rest of Kamigawa, the war continues to rage, mostly unabated, as it had for now 20 years, when during a fateful battle, the tide would turn sharply in the Kami's favor. After all this time, we kind of have an answer to Jamie's hypothesis of how long it takes Kamis to rematerialize in the material world. My Lore Boys canon is the stronger the being, the longer it takes.
So all right.
It's going to take more men to defeat it, but it'll take them also longer to respawn.
It takes longer to get your license if it's a tractor trailer than...
Yeah,
if,
exactly, exactly.
Oh, you it's gotta, like class 5 Kami, classes. Class 3 Kami.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So after all this time, the great Kami Okagachi had never manifested in the mortal realm. Not yet. But he's ready. 20 years, 19 years of absolutely nothing. No, but most people not even being aware that he existed.
Honestly, year 17 is bullshit. He passed the test there. I honestly think that the tester it really held him back for no good reason.
Parallel parking into another dimension that really fucked him up, right?
Yeah. Into another dimension. He didn't look both ways long enough. At the veil between worlds, basically,
right.
But
oh yeah, left, right, like, left per shard or whatever.
Yeah. The instructor didn't understand that he is the veil between worlds, so it's like it's kind of irrelevant for him to look anyway. But whatever. So during a great battle between mortals and spirits, Okagachi appeared. His upper jaw touched the sky, while his lower jaw emerged from the earth itself, and in a moment, 3,000 warriors died in his.
What the fuck? That's so cool.
An impossibly large eight-headed serpent with eyes that burned like stars. Okagachi knew how to make an appearance.
Wow.
I pasted a picture of him for you guys. Another dragon. Imagine, I know scale's always a funny thing when he's just flying in clouds, but imagine much bigger than all the dragons we've seen so far.
Yeah, in comparison to nothing, very big. Because there is like, there's nothing but clouds in the background of this image. He could be half an inch tall, or he could be 1,000 miles.
Yeah,
compared to earthworm flying through space. Yeah.
Compared to the dragons, very big. Compared to that bionicle guy, very small.
Probably very small. Probably not. However,
not millions
many
of miles. Tall.
Yeah, 40 right. million feet or something.
Yeah. So I have a quote for you guys from the Arcana blog on the Wizards of the Coast website.
Oh, the Arcana blog. That's that's just on the internet. It's run by like a single woman.
That's and also where all the wizards who go hunting like to post their catches as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
The horses began to scream and rear, lashing out with their hooves. Dozens fell over on one side and were quickly trampled by their skittish peers. The company captains shouted and cursed at their units, struggling to be heard over the din of shattering earth and dying horses. Above the remains of the sundered hill, a huge yellow sphere ignited. The heat and light were so intense that it boiled the closest retainers' eyes in their sockets and burned their hard, lacquered armor to fine ash that clung to their bodies. Another fireball ignited across the road from the first. Trapped between two suns, the outermost columns of soldiers and their horses withered into charred, smoking skeletons of black ash and carbonized bone. Those that survived the inferno screamed with one agonized voice. A stentorian roar split the air, drawing blood from every human ear on the road. The two blazing orbs spun in place, and the outer layer of flames peeled back like the skin from an orange, revealing two sharp black irises that widened vertically as they gazed down at the...
Jesus.
The armed men of Hawaito fell quiet under the terrible gaze of those two great eyes. Their breath ceased in mid-prayer, mid-curse, or mid-dying moan. Every living thing below those eyes looked up into them in pure, devastated awe. Titanic spirit beast roared again. A great shadow rose up past the eyes, casting the area into almost total darkness. Reptilian fangs as big as grain silos materialized as the shadow descended, simultaneously stretching down from above and erupting up from the soil below. The great jaws slammed shut, consuming the road, the valley, and everything. The entire kingdom of Hawaito felt the shock, as did every Kitsune village and Aki Warren for 100 leagues. The monster's head, never fully formed, began to fade as the last of the bordering pave stones along the road tumbled into the gaping wound that had been torn into the world. Jeez. The ground continued to rumble menacingly for a full day and
night. Holy shit.
So big. Like I said, he knows how to make an entrance.
Like, you can't even understand. Like, I watch construction workers and, like, Reddit stuff where there's, like, a pillar of dirt, right, that's, like, maybe 10 feet tall that falls over. And that guy's, like, dead because that's very, very, very heavy. And then you picture entire, like, valleys and towns and, like, that much being picked up altogether. The sheer force of everything that's going on is just, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you take a shot at God, you better not miss, I guess, is the moral of the
story. Yeah, I'm correct.
So the second time Okagachi appears, it appears just south of Iganjo Castle. So he, like, makes an entrance into the mortal world at the site of this battle over in an instant. Now it's, like, appears right outside the King's Gate, basically. The guardian dragon of Konda's realm, Yosai, the Morningstar, the Piss Dragon, attempts to fight it off, but was little more than a buzzing insect to Okagachi, easily batted aside.
Fucking get fucked, Piss Dragon.
Get fucked, Piss Dragon.
It's okay, I was going to write that down. I hear your keyboard going. That one's not going on iTunes. That's a free one.
So from the picture that I shared with you guys, he has one, like, big head, and it's kind of surrounded by smaller snake heads, right?
Yeah.
One of the smaller snake heads caught Yosai in its jaws and ripped him in half, forcing the dragon to flee mortally wounded. So there's your sense of scale. One of the small heads on the dragon ripped apart the big dragon.
It's beat a guy in a 1v1 with your pinky kind of thing. Like,
Exactly. Konda, Takeshi Konda, our hero, our savior of the story, ever full of pride, was unperturbed. He believed the power of the Taken One, of Okagachi's own heart, could protect him.
Wait, he fought, his lineage fought Nicobolas?
No, not this guy.
Okay.
This is the king. It was the Ronin Samurai's lineage,
right,
who fought Nicobolas.
Right, okay.
Who actually is the hero of the story, and...
Yeah. Okay, okay.
So, Konda is like, I'm not worried. I have this guy's heart. I have this big guy's heart, and the power of it will protect me. Which, in his defense, it was literally Okagachi's divinity. So... it is pretty powerful, and, you know, who knows how this will go. Okagachi tore through the defenses of his castle, devouring and crushing the armies that Konda had sent to intercept it, which, what a move, sending mortal armies again. Like, just
yeah,
go buy me a nanosecond, soldiers, please.
Yeah,
I just need another second to bask in the tiny grip of this giant yellow sun, baby.
Another second to bask—that's a good sentence.
I like to imagine that he's just like, he gets shot in the chest with an arrow or whatever, and he like unzips his whatever, like this traditional Japanese like king robe, and he's got like the disc right in front of his heart, sort of thing.
No, yeah, it's he gets hit with an arrow, but it's actually like it just hits the television screen that's right in the middle of his chest.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. He's a Teletubby.
Because he's a Teletubby, yeah. So Iganjo Castle, which had been protected by some of the most powerful spells and enchantments on the plane known in existence for these people, was reduced almost completely to ruin. To top it all off, in the midst of the chaos, Toshiro Umezawa sees his opportunity. Using the Myojin of Night's Reach power, he teleports into the castle, grabs the disc, and flees just as quickly.
Oh, he's the personnel kid!
So, just like, who knows how this battle would have gone, but King Konda sure doesn't have his disc.
I hope to God that this is canonized to have that like anime like noise where he just like teleports behind him, takes it out of his pocket, and then the exact same sound effect to go away.
Yeah, yeah. It's he teleports in, and Konda, who's obviously obsessed with the disc, is standing there looking right at it. He's like, "Hey, what's that over there?" And Konda turns around for a second, and he grabs it and teleports out. Yeah. Basically.
Just like forces it out of his hand with like a decoy disc, like he's Indiana Jones. Just like,
exactly.
That's it. Like a official regulation ultimate frisbee puts it there.
Yeah. But it's got like a little extra weight tape to it because the regulation frisbee's too light.
Too light. Exactly. Yeah. So Konda was extremely powerful. With the power of that which was taken, he was like, he was immortal, and it seems like he remains immortal even after the battle, and not just immortal, but kind of indestructible. So, seeing the battle's lost, he flees with that remaining power. He's not as strong as he was, so not strong enough to take Okagachi, in direct battle, but still strong enough to flee him and continue running and just keep letting him rampage across the plane and destroying everyone else.
There's residual effects to the baby touch, basically.
Exactly. You get baby touched enough, and you're immortal. what? Come on, bro. That's not a weird sentence. That's a normal sentence.
You get all their adrenochrome.
Exactly.
So Michiko, Konda's daughter, would finally be reunited with that which was taken when Toshi decides to betray all the kami he had made enemies of, and he gives Michiko the disc. So Myojin of Night's End or Night's Reach had given him this power, saying like, just don't give it to Konda and don't give it to Okagachi, because those two are going to mess up my plans for you know, being able to travel the multiverse forever and this war just never ending. And he's like, sure, I'll give it to Michiko then. You know, like he gives it to somebody else, and somebody else who can.
Okay.
I did what you asked, he said, with like his hands like up on his ribs, basically.
Like, you know what? I used to love in high school putting your hands on your hips, but then you kind of work your way up until it's like just like really like it's not even a stance anymore. Once you're up at your nipples,
really?
Hmm? You tilt your head to one side.
Yeah, exactly.
So Toshi gives the disc to Michiko. The disc instantly shatters in her hands.
Jeez.
And her sister spirit Kyodai was finally free. So you guys mentioned on that which was taken's image, the gold dragon with the weird like crystal spires coming out of its back. There was three faces.
Yeah.
Those three faces are Michiko's.
All three of them?
Because she's so intrinsically bound to the creation of this thing. Because it wasn't necessarily a gold dragon when it was taken by Konda. It seems like it might have kind of manifested when it was tore out of Okagachi into something new, and that something was heavily influenced by the birth of Michiko as well.
Okay.
So Michiko and Kyodai together would merge, becoming the Sisters of Flesh and Spirit. Okagachi was no longer the most powerful being on Kamigawa. Though Kyodai seemed insignificant in the shadow of her father, She had once been a part of Okagachi, and not just any part. She had been its divinity, the core of its being. Like I said, he was the essence of his power in a lot of ways. And it seems like Okagachi's power is also like what Konda has, just a lingering effect of having Kyodai within. So separated now, with a form and will of her own, like I said, kind of materialized into this gold dragon, which she decides she likes. She does not want to be consumed into the essence of the Great Serpent. She's like, I'm independent now. I'm not going back to Oblivion, basically. Can you blame her? Okagachi obviously doesn't want to accept that. She wants to keep her freedom and individuality. She wants to save the lives of the people who had set her free after 20 years of imprisonment. So she doesn't want Michiko to die. She doesn't want Toshi to die. She shares her power with Princess Michiko, and she confronts her father. Together, the Sisters of Flesh and Spirit defeat Okagachi. One by one, they attacked its head to drain its power, until finally they were able to tear it from the sky, no longer than a garden. So it seems like she just like essence drains it until it's like kind of what we were joking about. It's a little earthworm snake.
Okay, I like the one by one attacked its head. Like they have a whole army of 10,000 lined up to go thwap, and then go to the back of the line. The next guy thwap.
Impossibly big. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they reduce it, it only has two heads remaining, and the two women each bite off one head. So Kyodai and Michiko each bite off one of the final heads and cast it aside. They step into the now vacant role of guardian of the veil between mortal and spirit realm. So they take over Kyodai's dad's job. Of course, that wasn't the only father who would pay for his crimes. Though still immortal, the sisters punctured Konda's eyes and petrified his undying body before crushing him into a million pieces. His still living remains are thought to lie somewhere in the Jukai forest to this day.
Wow.
Holy shit.
So, no tears shed for dad on that one, right?
No kidding. Holy fuck.
And that's the Kami War. That's the intro to Kamigawa.
Cool.
Hope you guys liked it. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, make sure to tell your friends, leave us a positive review on your podcast app of choice, or just, you know, let strangers know, let enemies know about the Lore Boys podcast. Let the freaking Chinese government know about the Lore Boys podcast, okay? and Tucker Carlson, I guess.
Yeah,
it's probably easier to get onto Tucker than it is
the two,
to get
the two things we're trying firewall. To get banned from, China and Fox News, so...
we need it's like the nine-tailed Fox News and the commies.
So the C in CNN is for Kamigawa.
The C in CCP is Kami. Thanks for listening, everybody. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. Pete, what's going on in the Instagram and storefronts days?
Oh, you know, at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. Say hi. Check out our artwork. On the storefront, we are extending the 500,000 download sale another week because I fucked it up because I'm an idiot. So you can still use code LoreBoy50 on the spring.com/LoreBoys. The link's in the description to get half off everything in the store. I will fix it before this episode comes out, I promise.
Oh, you've committed yourself now.
I'm going to do it tomorrow. I got a day. And then, yeah, of course, and then COVID permitting, but things are going well, TM. We are going to be at Montreal Comic Con from July 7th to July 10th, 2022, baby. If you could make it, it would be great to say hi and maybe have some drinks afterwards and just whatever. Just meet some people in real life.
Yeah, if you ever wanted to crunch at us.
Yes, sir.
That'd be the place to do it. Montreal is the easiest place. It's the most crunchable location
crunchable.
On Earth. Yeah.
Crunchtastic. Jamie, anything you wanna shout out?
Find me in the Discord. Just for example, Magnus, who's in the Discord, just started playing Diablo 2, which I'm playing a lot of. And just by him being in the Discord, I knew he was playing, so I gave him like a Tal Rasha's mask, set him off for the perfect set for a Sork. I gave him a bunch of starter gear and some stuff to get him started. So, you know, there's benefits. You get in that Discord, and if you're playing the same game as me, I might just help you out, especially when no one else wants to play this 21-year-old game. So,
yeah.
Daddy may shower you with riches.
Yeah.
He might just help you. And also, if you wanted to help him out and give him some cool stuff, I'm sure Jamie wouldn't say no.
Some Wartravs boots wouldn't. I kind of need them, but anyways, yeah.
And if you guys like the show, want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon. That's patreon.com/thelorboys. We have a couple different tiers. You guys can get the script for this episode, including all the artwork that was mentioned on it on one of the tiers. We post those every Friday.
Friday.
A lot of confidence. You'll get all the loser totals, the one that you guys could hear my keyboard clacking away to write down Get Fucked Piss Dragon. That comes out on Patreon every week as well.
Sure does. So
you guys can take a look at that. If you guys can afford it, of course, please don't give us any money if you're deciding between us and eating. I know it's a hard choice, but it's the wrong choice. And if you guys, of course, don't trust Patreon and don't feel like giving away real money, we do have Loreboys Prime, a service which we've always offered. And we, as always, need your guys' help. We are gearing up to go to war. Peter did piss off God, which kind of sucked for all of us.
Happens.
But, you know, we're waiting for somebody to take the blame, or we're looking for somebody to take the blame for 20 years. 20 years, and then Pete will come clean. And after that time, you'll be exonerated, and you should be freed from prison, right? After
bring a light book or something. It's kind of like a DMV.
You're gonna end up waiting for quite a while in this like purgatory Department of Motor Vehicles, where it's just right. you take a number, but your the ticket is blank basically, or you take a number and you always end up going to the wrong counter. So you get like H8 or whatever, and you go to the H counter and they say no, you need a J ticket. So you go and get a J ticket, and you go to the J counter. And, no, you need an I ticket.
Your H8 was your H8 just spelled hate at the beginning. I don't know if you noticed that. That's pretty cool.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Damn.
I've been playing a lot of Diablo. there's a demon of that whole thing up there, but yeah.
Oh, demon of hate. True.
Yeah.
Or Lord of Hate, as he's more accurately known. But yeah, so if you want to volunteer to be responsible for Peter's crimes, which we won't list out too much, I'll just say that he did piss off God with this one, then please crunch at us. You can do it in person or at Comic-Con. I almost said Boy-Con, but that's not true.
Not Boy-Con anyway. is our imaginary convention.
That's what's gonna happen the hour that Comic-Con closes and we're set loose upon the city of Montreal. Yeah, it becomes Boy-Con.
It's Boy-Con, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a good turnout at Montreal Comic-Con, who knows, maybe we do a little get together and call it Boy-Con or something like that in the future. So turn up if you can, freshen up your passports. We'll probably try and do an actual Boy-Con in the States somehow, but who knows how any of this stuff works, guys? We're idiots.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. That would be cool. So let us know if you want it. Oh, we're also prepping a mailbag, so send us your emails.
Yeah. We got a lot of stuff to do, huh?
We got so much stuff to do, dude. We got so much stuff to do. You guys are so busy. I've been playing like a ton of Kingmaker. I don't have any time. Come on. that would constitute a lore boys.
Lore boys.
Oh.
Goodbye. Out. Oh, we lost Ethan.
That explains it. Yeah, Thunderstorm finally took him out
right at the end. We're almost done anyways, but
I like this picture of him though.
Maybe perfect timing. Yeah, he took a picture of me. I saw it too, posted in Community Gaming. Guys, if you want to see what I look like,
sure. Oh,
you're all in Community Gaming if you're a patron, never mind.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.